So is it scary because we're supposed to know already without asking? Is it scary because we've been given the message that even our questions can be harmful and we never want to be harmful? Is it scary because it's not okay to have more health than somebody else or to have more joy than somebody else?
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com and UnderstandingAutoimmune.com, where you'll find over 425-plus episodes of this show. Yep, that's right, 425-plus, and I am so excited to be offering another one with a return guest. I know many of you have asked for her, and I did not realize it's been over a year since she appeared on our show. It was back in March of 2022 that she last appeared on our show. She recently sent an email out to her group, and I strongly suggest you get on that email list because it is really awesome what she offers. And so we'll tell you how to do that in just a minute. But she sent out an email just the other day called, and this was the title. I love the title, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But the title is Lightness When Things Are Difficult, Nonviolent Communication and Resonant Language Dialogue Skills. Now, some of you might be rolling your eyes, but I just went, yes, yes, yes. Because how many times have we had difficult conversations with medical professionals or maybe our loved ones who can't quite understand what's going on? Like, why can't you have that piece of cake? Or you said you'd go and now you can't go. We all have been there knowing that fatigue or a flare will happen. And even with the best of intentions, we have to have those difficult conversations. And so that's why, get ready, I asked Sarah Payton to come back. She's one of our most asked for experts, and I just love and adore her. And I've known her for a long, long time and always learning new things from her. So let me read her bio really quick for you. If you're not familiar with Sarah, she's the author of W.W. Norton's Your Resonant Self. That's resonant, not resident. It's resonant. It's a way we talk to ourselves. Your Resonant Self Workbook and Affirmations for Turbulent Times. She teaches and speaks internationally about the ways that relationship and language transform the brain and prevent and heal trauma. And audience members always leave Sarah's presentations with just tremendous wisdom and self-compassion. And I want to add in there, not in her bio, but compassion for others and often making sense of themselves and others for the first time. So welcome, Sarah. It's so good to see you again.
What a pleasure to be with you, Sharon. What a delight.
Thank you. And thank you for being available so quickly. And I just want the audience to know that I'm actually not in this continental United States. I'm off on an island somewhere and happened to see this email and quickly said, we got to have Sarah on the show. We were actually going to have an encore presentation for my week off here. But after I saw this, I said, let's have Sarah on. So Sarah, let's talk about, how do you define difficult conversation? I mean, I know that's a broad question, but
conversations can be difficult in so many different ways. They can be difficult because of power imbalances. They can be difficult because the other person is talking only about themselves and we get really bored.
Well, that one rings a bell.
They can be difficult because of what you mentioned in in the intro, you know, that we have to change agreements that we have or change commitments that we've made with people, or that they have to change commitments with us. We can have very difficult conversations that are connected to people's difficult diagnoses and illnesses and even fatal diagnoses. There are so many ways that things can be difficult. It's almost a miracle when conversations are easy and fun and light and flowing.
Yes, it is. Although I find lots of times, and I don't know if this is part of the skill set or not, but in those kinds of conversations, where even where they're light and flowing, I find that times there's compromise.
Oh, yeah. No, you're not kidding. Yeah, because we're always balancing as humans. We're always balancing, you know, the need for belonging and the need for authenticity. And I think about this a lot because lately my husband's been very ill. And so my friendship pool has shrank because I can't do as much as I used to be able to do. And so even in the lightness, there can be like difficult things that happen. And sometimes people are like, they don't even want to talk about illness. They stop talking to us, and we don't even know that a conversation was difficult until, oh dear, so-and-so is no longer in contact with us.
You know, that's interesting. I don't want to dwell on that topic per se, because I think this is such a broad thing, but I was thinking of a friend of mine who got a long-term degenerative autoimmune condition and so slowly went, sort of wasted away, unfortunately, not passed away not too long ago, which was really sad. They had commented to me, thank you so much for coming and seeing me. They couldn't get out. They were homebound. Thank you so much for coming and seeing me. No one comes to see me anymore. And I thought about it because it was a tough conversation. It's like, what do I talk about? Is it okay to talk about? You know, I just went to the beach knowing that they are no longer capable of that. I mean, it was so hard for me to, but yet I knew I wanted to go.
What a beautiful description of a difficult conversation. Because a lot of times we care so much about what's happening with the other person, and we genuinely are at a loss. What do we do now?
Well, it's sort of like, what's okay to say that won't make them feel more loss? You know, right. When I was thinking about my trip to the beach, they used to love the beach. Well, they still did, you know, but it was like, will that make them lonely and sadder if I talk about my trip to the beach? I mean, I know that seems kind of minuscule, but it went through my mind.
This brings us to one of our first skills that we'll be learning in this class series, which has a free first session on Monday night in just some days here. One of the skills is consent. And we get to, it's surprising, but we actually get to ask these questions. We get to say, I was just at the beach. Is it nice to talk about the beach, or is it torture? I want to know, because I really like, you know, coming to see you, and I want to bring whatever it is that is sweet for you. Is it sweetest for you to tell me a little about how you are? Is it sweetest for you for us to imagine the beach together? And we get to actually, you know, use consent and inquiry and warm curiosity with each other in ways that we don't expect to. We often think that we're supposed to know what the other person, what will be supportive for the other person.
And especially if we've known the person for a long time, but then something changes.
No kidding.
Like a diagnosis, you know.
No kidding.
I even noticed that with my diagnosis, my world shrank.
Yeah.
For a while until I, you know, reemerged. And I still have difficult conversations like, no, I can't. I'm sorry. You enjoy your birthday cake and I'll just sit here and, you know, drink my tea or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that, yet they're not okay with that. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot.
So that's all about consent too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. As you're saying consent, it still sounds scary, Sarah, for me to ask that question. Like, is it okay if we talk about the beach? I don't know. That even seems scary to me. I don't know. Am I wimping out here?
No, not at all. we're starting to go into the very interesting world that we've strayed into before, which is the world of unconscious contracts. So is it scary because we're supposed to know already without asking? Is it scary because we've been given the message that even our questions can be harmful and we never want to be harmful? Is it scary because it's not okay to have more health than somebody else or to have more joy than somebody else? Are there any of those that are lighting you up at all in response to this situation?
I think the one, like the second one about the sort of the permission to talk about it,
yeah.
like, will it bring more pain to the person if I talk about it?
Yeah.
But then, even if I'm talking about fond memories of the times that they and I spent at the beach, you know, is that going to be more painful and make the loss more prominent? You know, that's why lightness and when things are difficult, I was like, yes, I'm going to take this class.
Yeah, fun. So then we're like, okay, what's scary here is that we don't want to hurt anybody. We are surprisingly filled with love. Most of us have such a desire not to ever hurt anybody. And especially people that we love. And so, that's an impossible dream for all of us, but wouldn't we all love to be able to tell exactly where the good stepping stones are in our relationships with people when we know that they're in pain or that they have loss? Wouldn't it be sweet to have that confidence of stepping on solid stones in the middle of all the tragedy and loss and grief?
Yes. Yeah, that's lovely. That's lovely. And one of the things that came to mind was, as we develop these skills, I might be jumping too far ahead.
No, I love it. I love the jumping. It's so fun.
As we learn these skills, I'm just thinking of a few people that it's sort of like when you change, other people will change along with you, but it might come as a surprise to the other people. Like, what? they didn't come with the same set of skills. Like, oh, we're developing new solid stepping stone. Instead of talking on eggshells, we're now creating a solid path together. Do they ever look at you and kind of like, oh, did you just come from a class or something?
Well, in my world, everybody expects me to be a little odd. So
I think I run into that too, but I'm thinking out loud here with some of my friends that if they showed up in that type of place, I'm thinking how juicy the conversations would be if they could just both let go of the expectations of what it had been.
Yeah. This is such an interesting piece. That the regular register of human conversation is fairly narrow. Like, even with our partners, if we tracked all through the day. Now, you had said this wonderful thing before we got on the phone, which was that you, even when you're not with your partner, you guys talk on the phone all the time. So I don't think it's going to be true about you. But for many of the rest of us, there's this experience during the day of, like, there are three or four main questions that get asked that are about getting things done. I mean, does the car have gas? Who's using the car if there's only one car? You know, have the kids been taken care of? Have the animals been taken care of? Those are like the four big questions. Or has the housework been done? Or, you know, what needs to be fixed? It's like taking care of our world. It's like this narrow little sort of stretch of territory that is where we usually travel. And so no wonder the difficult conversations are hard, because they're hard not just because they're difficult, but they're hard also because they're different from taking care of business.
We certainly haven't practiced them as much as, like, have you fed the dog?
Right, exactly. They're unfamiliar. It's new skills that we need. Like this question of, like, being with somebody and saying, what is it that, you know, I'd love to have the experience that my presence was sweet for you? What kinds of conversational subjects are sweet for you these days, you know? So it's an interesting and hard question.
It is a hard question. When I thought, the minute I heard it, I was like, well, how would I even answer that? That is a hard question.
Yeah. Although knowing you, my guess would be that you would say, let's talk about everything.
Exactly. Yes, for sure.
No prohibition.
Let's talk about everything. And I think it's important, some of my, I'll put in air quotes, rules, because they're not really rules, but, you know, respect is really important for me, and that sometimes we might have to agree to disagree, but I want to know your point of view. I want to know people's points of view. I may not always agree, or I might have a nuance to it or a different take on it. Like, have you considered this point of view for, you know, or like, what if we go up to the observer role and look down on this conversation from an observer role? So, yeah, you know me, I do that. But
and there are so many difficult conversations these days. Our society is more separated by points of view than it ever has been during my lifetime. People have really different ideas about what's going to serve. And what's good for the future and what's good for the world. People have such different ideas. So, for example, I was doing a climate series and I would get letters from people who were like, you can't do this. You can't say that carbon-based fuels are the fossil fuels are the problem. And I was like, well, I can actually. This is my series. And, you know, it says in black and white, this is our foundational understanding of the problem. But, there was a shocked horror from these folks. It was genuine. It was genuinely authentic that they believed something different and that they felt like it was good for the world to believe something different. Or recently I was working with a question about whether or not it's okay to have Black, Indigenous, and people of color have their own breakout groups in my classes. And what we've found is that there are some folks who actually will stay in the classes and continue to come where they would have given up and not returned simply because they're exhausted from the experience of always being in spaces where they're a different shade of skin color than anybody else. So we create these beautiful possibilities for people to have non-white spaces. And I received a really intense letter about somebody who was so convinced, so genuinely and authentically concerned about this being divisive. So here we are with these very interesting and important subjects, where what we need more than anything else is exactly, as you said, like beloved community, from the Martin Luther King Jr. idea of beloved community, that everybody belongs, that if somebody doesn't believe in that fossil fuels are important, they still belong. If somebody, or for people who are believing that fossil fuels are not important, then I still belong. I believe fossil fuel is important, but I still belong to them. Like, this idea that we still belong to each other is such an interesting and different and radical way to kind of, as you said, take the bird's eye view and pop things up a little bit and say, yeah, you can have a different idea than me and you still matter to me. Your experience matters to me. Your voice matters to me. Your love for the world matters for me. Am I making any sense here, Sharon?
Absolutely. And I want to add, when we have the training, like the beautiful training we'll receive in the dialogue skills class, and someone else does not, I'm just curious, like, okay, I can see some area for, like, you're coming from a perspective of openness and trying to hold multiple viewpoints in your head at one time and trying to, you know, I could see how you could come from that point of view, the types of thoughts in my head. And yet when someone doesn't have that same training, I guess I'm sort of like, how do we train the whole world, Sarah?
Oh, wouldn't that be
fun? wonderful? Because I'm thinking how I don't like to be attacked. So like if someone came on like, well, you're wrong, you know, about that topic and things like that. I love discussing topics, but I don't like being accused of something that may or may not be true.
It's stressful. And it's stressful when people think that our views or our actions or our decisions or our policies are harming the world. That's a challenging moment. And what is so wonderful about the idea of beloved community is that we get to do it, that one person can do it, that it's not, doesn't have to be two people. And people can be very interestingly surprised. I had a plumber here. It was back in the days when Hillary and Barack Obama were fighting it out for the official candidacy for the Democratic Party. And he was like, he was like so convinced that she was like a non-human being. And it was so sweet to be in the same room with him and to feel his genuine protectiveness and care for the world, even though his viewpoint was completely different from my viewpoint. But I still feel a great affection for the sweetness of the soul of this being who had so much protective energy. So it's almost like part of difficult conversations and part of beloved community is taking a step back and at the same time, not abandoning ourselves. And that's quite tricky. I was in conversation just recently and I was not doing very well.
Yes, it happened.
Somebody was yelling at me and telling me I was wrong. And they said, and what's your view on this? And I was like, wow.
It's okay.
I was like a dragon, you know. And my friend was there with me. And my friend says, hang on, let's make sure everybody's hearing each other. And they took it, you know, like, Sarah, you know, are you hearing? And Sarah, what do you have to express? And I expressed, and the other people didn't respond to what I expressed. And she went back. She said, okay, I don't think Sarah's point was clearly heard. Let's make sure it's clearly heard. And there was this very sweet support for me so that I didn't have to be my dragon self. It was very interesting.
I would have loved to have been in the observer role of that. I would have loved that. I think it's so important to talk about these conversations and not just from like the political view, which to me is quite polarized. Yeah. But, you know, before we got in the conversation, we were talking about what I'll call generational differences. I don't know if that's the correct term, but that's the term I'm going to use. Yeah. And I was mentioning how I had put together a chart of the different dates that different generations could recognize, like certain generations, the boomers knew of the Vietnam War firsthand, and Gen Z, it's just in the history books. And I find that also interesting, the comparisons of when we're talking cross-generational and this idea, the other one that always gets my hackles up, which is sort of cross-generational, but it's lots of other things, is when someone wants to educate me.
Oh, yeah.
I just get my hackles up. I'm all for a lively debate and conversation, right. But when somebody wants to educate me, even just when I hear the word, I'm like, yeah, that's when my dragon comes out. When somebody says, you need to be educated. I'm
like, right. First of all, in those moments, do you need acknowledgement of boredom and irritation?
Not boredom. It's irritation that somehow I don't have the intellectual capacity to have this conversation. When I hear education, it may not be fair to the word, but I think top down.
So there's something about respect here.
Yeah, I'm sure there's an unconscious contract in there about being educated as sort of a top down sort of term to me. So
yeah, and
I find that a lot in the medical community, that doctors or other healthcare professionals want to educate you, the patient. And I'm like, I probably have read more research papers on it than you have, dude.
It's a bit like in those moments, we need a lot of self-compassion in order to find our own dignity. And in order to interrupt, and in order to be insistent with kindness. It's another interesting skill.
Absolutely. Insistent yes. with kindness. I'm going to make a note of that. I like those words.
Yeah, yeah. To say to a doctor who is on their little roll, yes, 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 I understand that. Yes, I know that research. Or yes, thank you. Here's what I really want to know from you. To just like get them on the same page.
Get them focused.
Yeah, exactly. And get them focused to the area that's most helpful for us. You know, is what's most helpful, like, I want to know about clinical trials. That's what I want to hear about today. You know, it's almost like in those power imbalances, we need all of our skills and practices. We need to consider ourselves accompanied, like that I would go into a doctor's appointment. So often we're alone when we're in a doctor's right. appointment. And so often they even have some sort of medical person who's taking notes, or, you know, medical assistant or something that's there too. And so it's like even two against one often. And so we need to almost like take our Sharon with us, or take our Sarah with us, so that we have a sense of having others in the room with us, so that we don't consider ourselves alone.
I always take notes of whether research I've read is sort of like, I'm not alone because the research says, but I'll take notes with me and read from the notes.
That's the second good skill for when there's a power imbalance, is having it in writing, so that you can track, even though the doctor's not responding to your verbal cues. It gives you an anchor and you can go, okay, thank you. You have not yet spoken to my question about clinical trials, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, just thank you. You have not yet spoken to this question. And our focused attention and determination is another very, very critical capacity to take with us in those moments. And when we're struggling with any kind of illness, that can be exhausting. So just bringing the self-compassion along always. And bringing the self-compassion if we forgot to take notes, and bring notes with us. And just like, okay, doing, you know, just like to be with ourselves and say, yes, Sarah, I acknowledge you for doing the very best that you can. I know doctors are stressful. So the whole doctor thing makes you forget everything, all of your skills. Does not matter. You're still totally beloved. And as we hold ourselves in that way, we decrease, because we can actually have trauma responses from being with authority figures who won't listen. So it's very important to have that self-compassionate view of ourselves, no matter what the outcome is.
Wow. And I agree with trauma responses. Yeah. I dealt with a couple of them early in the diagnosis, and it took me a while to figure out what was going on. And then once I worked with you and worked through that process, I was like, yes, okay, it's okay. I'm okay. I may not be happy. I may be a little discombobulated right now, but I'm okay, and I'm safe, and I matter. Those are the key words that I always like to say to myself.
Yes.
And that was learned from Sarah, everybody.
And you are beloved and delightful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to take a quick commercial break so I could just bask in that for just a moment. We'll see you in a minute or two. We'll be right back.
The Autoimmune Hour will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by understandingautoimmune.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight I am just thrilled. We're kind of having a special session here. We've got Sarah Payton on the line, and she's got an amazing class coming up. And guys, you're going to have to jump on it because it's really quick. It's starting. There's a free seminar on the 24th. We got to jump on this if you want to, but we're still going to learn a lot. If you missed it, you're listening later, you're still going to learn a lot from our conversation, as you've already seen in the first half of the show. And so I just want to give a little plug to that, because the title is Lightness When Things Are Difficult, Nonviolent Communication and Resonant Language Dialogue Skills. I know it's a mouthful, but you've heard about how we learn to talk, how we learn to have those difficult conversations and be okay. How we come okay, regardless of the outcome of the conversation. And so, Sarah, it's so great to have you on. I've just been 150% into this conversation, but I had a question about saying no. Mm-hmm. That is so tough to, so tough. And on so many levels, I think it's a huge question that we have to dive into too, because I'm thinking of the times when I'm fatigued, and I promised to go somewhere with somebody when I was feeling great last week, and then I woke up today and I could barely move my legs and I have to say no. Or on, you know, other levels to family members and stuff. So let's talk a little bit about the strength of saying no.
Yes, there are so many unconscious contracts that can get in the way of saying no. It can be, I will never say no. It can be, I will prioritize everyone else before myself. It can be, I am not worth taking time for or taking care of. It can be, and those are really some of the main ones that happen with no. I will not know I need to say no. That's another big one. Yeah, then we find ourselves, you know, pushing through and doing those things anyway, even though it's harmful to our health, because it was impossible to say no. So there's this interesting development of self being important. I did a whole keynote talk about this just recently, about the whole reaction I have whenever I'm on a plane and the air support person, the steward, stewardess, that's my air host, says, and if the oxygen masks fall, put your oxygen mask on yourself first before you put it on any little people or people who need support around you. And I'm like, I'm always like, no, no, that's wrong. How can you be saying that? I always have to have like a little conversation with myself and go, Sarah, it's really important for the oxygen to be with you so that you can function and help the other people. You know, it's like I have to go through the logic of it every time because my cells are so used to giving to the others. That's what we're made for. That's what we're supposed to do. So saying no flies in the face of all of these messages about love. And we are beings made of love. So how the heck does a being made of love figure out how to say no? We have to begin to circle into, in very much the same way as this oxygen thing on planes, we have to circle into, oh, the supply of love to me is the most important thing. Not so that I can be a selfish, closed off being who doesn't have anything to do with anybody else, but to see ourselves as springs, to have a realistic idea of ourselves as a spring of water in nature, and to feel what's coming up and to feel it bubble out, and to know how to notice how much there is that can bubble out, instead of kind of overdrawing our springs, which is what we kind of tend to do because we're beings made of love. So how do we begin to be in a really sweet relationship with whatever spring water is coming? And this is, you know, that whole idea of how many spoons do I have? We could ask, how much water do I have? How much water is flowing into me? And how can I be most in service of the spring so that I can be most in service of whatever comes to flow out? If we start to think of it that way, saying no begins to be something that we're doing in service of love instead of in service of selfishness. We need to change our frame about how we're thinking about our no's and find their protectiveness, their very realistic capacity to help preserve the flow.
Absolutely. One thing I learned, it's kind of a two-part thing I learned about no early on when I was struggling with it, was first off, when you say yes to everything, you're obviously saying no to something, right? Yeah. I mean, there's only so much time.
Yeah.
And I had a lovely mentor point out to me that when you say yes, and it's, let's say concentric circles, like your family and then your extended family and, you know, on and on to your community, whatever. And if you're out there saying yes to everything, that too often our no's go to those closest to us because this time they'll just understand. And unfortunately, this time becomes next time and next time and next time, we're having to say no to those closest to us that in reality, in my mind, those are the ones I want to say yes most to. So it kind of creates a conundrum here that we're out there saying yes to, you know, everything possible. And the people, the closest to us are getting the no's because we run out of time.
Yes, yes. Run out of time, run out of energy, run out of water. Yeah. So this is a very sweet way to think of it as well. And so we can also think about this. We've talked about this. It's kind of a funny concept, but it's something I love very much. So I just want to mention it in passing. And I think you and I have had a whole conversation about healthy disgust. Did we get to have a whole conversation? Yes. Yes. So we can reference the healthy disgust webinar, because with our healthy disgust, and we know what we want to say no to. And we know what we want to say yes to. So that's another thing that really helps us is it's almost like a foreign idea sometimes that we could be depleted or that we could be overwhelmed. I think overwhelm is the word I hear most often from people in this world is I'm overwhelmed. I'm just so overwhelmed. And when we begin to say, oh, if I'm saying I'm so overwhelmed, it means I'm trying to take more in than I have room for. What's a good intake that allows me to digest instead of overstuffing myself? And this has got, I mean, as does everything we work with in the world of relational neuroscience, as soon as we start to touch something, we begin to touch roots of trauma as well. So if we were never allowed to say that something was too much for us, then we won't be allowed to say no. So we get to also be in relationship with our young selves that we're told, you don't get to say no. You have to do as you're told. Oh, okay, I'll do as I'm told. Then we go out into the world, we're overwhelmed because we're just supposed to do what we're told. So some of these very deeply held ideas need to be challenged. And this is one of them. Being a good girl. We get to challenge being a good girl.
A good girl or a good guy, either way.
A good kid, yeah.
A good kid, a good child, a good yeah. parent, whatever it is, for yeah. sure. Now, yeah. we're down just about to the last 10 minutes, and I wanted to ask you this question of intimacy with others. Mm. I know I was reading a little bit in your email about it. And can you define that kind of intimacy? Because I think in some respects, that can be a trigger word for people. And yeah. When I was reading it, I was like, I'd love to know Sarah's definition of intimacy.
My definition of intimacy is when we get to know about each other's vulnerability in a way that's really safe and sweet. So vulnerability is... like when we're really happy, we're not vulnerable. When we're really angry, we're not vulnerable. Both of those are kind of broadcast states. When we're in broadcast, we're not vulnerable. When we're in broadcast, we can't be intimate because the flow of intimacy goes between one person and another person. So there has to be a capacity to take in order for there to be intimacy. So the places that allow us to take more in is when we can acknowledge that we're sad, when we can acknowledge that we're afraid, that we can acknowledge that the impact of our actions on others, and when we have a warm curiosity about the other. So we can be happy together and goofy together and playful together. And yet that is not intimacy. The intimacy comes when there's some kind of shared vulnerability. When somebody is sad and the other person is not scared by the sadness. When somebody is afraid and the other person is not pushed away by the fear. So there's this interesting multi-part experience of intimacy where part of the experience is expressing emotions that are risky because the things that people turn away from most often are sadness. And this is a little bit what happens when we get that diagnosis and begin to speak about it, or we have a partner who has a diagnosis and we begin to speak about it. People are like, this sadness is too much for me. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I love Sarah, but I don't know. I'm just going to go away. because they don't love us any less if there's no intimacy. They just, you know, they're the neural structures that hold these more tender and vulnerable emotions are not in place. It's sort of like, there are pathways in the human brain that are created by through experiences of emotion being safe, of nobody turning, having to turn away, that strengthens. It's almost like a permaculture garden in the human mind, where these growing and growing and growing of neurons that can appreciate the risky and vulnerable emotions.
I love that. And I'm thinking out loud here. So some of my deepest friendships are where, I guess the only words I have for it is, we both know we're going to be okay regardless of what's said.
Yeah.
I may be surprised. I may be disappointed. I may be happy. I may be sad that they said that for them, like, wow, that sounds painful. Yeah. But is that kind of what we're talking about? That we, yes, instead of it starting an argument, you could say, "Whoa, thank you for sharing that. I'm not sure I totally understand. Can you tell me more so I can understand more?"
Yeah. Or I have a beloved friend who always surprises me, and he'll say, "Your anger is welcome with me." Or he'll say, "Your sadness is welcome here."
That's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, it's making it very explicit, right? Yeah. Says, I am not going anywhere. And I just lean into that relationship with so much relief.
Yeah, that is an interesting to say. And I think that's the unspoken words is in true love is like, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I may have a response that I'll need to monitor myself and manage on my own to that, but I'm not going anywhere. I think we all want friends in our lives that are like that, you can say anything that you want. You just know they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, they just love you. You just love them. The love, it's very interesting, this thing about love and intimacy, though, just to come back to that, because it's such a fascinating thing that even the people who are turning away and going away from us, because whatever pain we're in is not something they can hold, they still love us. They're off on the other side of the world doing their thing. They still love us. It's a very counterintuitive. We always think if somebody goes away, they don't care about us anymore.
That's an interesting thought. I'm thinking from my own perspective of, relationships that are no longer close, or maybe we haven't spoken in decades.
Yeah.
And you're right. I still care about them. And if they were to reach out, I guess that's kind of like unfair to say, well, why don't you reach out? But that's an interesting concept. It is true. Yeah. All the people that I've met, there's still some care and concern for their well-being.
I had a boyfriend, how in Facebook, the old boyfriend sometimes finds you and, 30, 40 years later, they contact you. He wrote to me and he's like, "Oh, I'm so glad to find you. I still love you." I was like, "What do you mean you still love me? When you broke up with me, you told me you didn't love me and that you'd never love me and that you lied." He said, "You love me." He said, "Oh, I was young. I didn't know how to do anything. I always loved you." I was like, dang, 30, 40 years of shame thinking that I believed him when it wasn't true. It was like the weirdest experience. It like cracked open my shame jar and that I'd been carrying in my heart. And I was like, that's so strange. But it was wonderful.
It's interesting you talk about that. Mine wasn't just one person. It was going to a reunion.
Yeah.
Seeing the popular people, and I never was one of those. You're talking about crack open the shame jar. I'm not sure it was, I would label it all shame. I guess I need a little clarity on that. But it was like cracking open, like, wow. Sharon, you've done good for yourself, the geeky girl back then, decades of life experience and knowledge and all sorts of things. So wasn't really the same person they knew from back then.
Right. I think I love thinking of my friends when I was 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old. Sometimes we don't remember them, but sometimes we'll find old pictures from preschool or kindergarten or first grade. And I think, oh, I just love them so much.
I don't even know what's happened to most of them, but yes, that's right. True. When you bring that up, names came to my mind right away.
Yeah.
Now, we're down to 3 minutes. I want you to please tell us about this class. I'm sorry, guys, with Sarah and I, you know, we just don't know. So Sarah, please tell us about this class because I'm sorry.
All right. We're going to learn about resonant language and how it's different to be in the instrumental brain and different to be in the relational brain, that there's resonance and body involvement that happens when we start to move towards intimacy, when we start to move towards kind of feeling and understanding each other and it not being too scary. We'll think about register of language and this sort of regular kind of stripe of language that most of us function within and how odd it is to move outside it and how it helps to ask consent. We'll be thinking about ways to bring resonance into regular everyday conversation with metaphor and impossible dream guesses. We'll feel the movement into more intimacy. We'll practice saying no when it's hard. We'll work with IU dialogue, and we can even work with IU dialogue in difficult political conversations, which can take us toward that idea of beloved community, of everybody mattering and everybody belonging, no matter what they believe. Also, we'll do a little bit with finding balance after difficult moments and how to do rupture and repair. So it's going to be a very kind of full exploration of a lot of different skills that let us find richness and connection, no matter what's happening, no matter what's happening.
Fantastic, because I'm saying that a lot these days, what's happening? So... So true. So give us the website. How do we find out about it? How we sign up for it?
Yes, this is one you'll be able to find. You can find it on either my website, which is sarahpayton.com, no spaces, or you can find it on nvcacademy.com, and which no spaces, NVC Academy. And go now and sign up for Monday night's free class to be able to do more and get into breakout rooms and try this stuff out and feel how it feels in your body.
Thank you so much, Sarah. You are a delight. And even if you're listening to this after that event, check out Sarah's website because she's constantly offering new, juicier stuff. Every time I talk to her, I'm always learning something new. And I've known her decades, and I'm still delighted with our deep conversations. And so thank you so much, my dear friend. I'm so excited for this class. I'm looking forward to Monday nights. And everyone, thank you for joining us. Have a great week, whatever your adventures. I hope to see you there at the webinar. And enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking you questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.